Welcome to Podcast Ed, the podcast of RedefinedOnline.org, covering the stories behind the new definition of public education. On this episode, Step Up for Students President Doug Tuthill talks to Dr. Rebecca Batista and Marcy Ayers, two leaders of the only Catholic virtual school in the country run by an archdiocese, the Miami Catholic Virtual School. The flexibility of the virtual school has been greatly helpful for families seeking faith-based education during the pandemic. The three discuss how the school helps fill student gaps, as well as supplement curriculum with partner schools all over the country, the need for even more flexibility, and more. Thank you for listening and enjoy the episode. So we're very excited today to have Dr. Rebecca Batista and Marcy Ayers from the interesting virtual school. This is the only Catholic virtual school in the country that's run by an archdiocese. So this is the Archdiocese of Miami's virtual Catholic school. So it's going to be an exciting conversation as we talk about a very unique school and the role that you're now playing within Catholic education in Florida and nationally, because you have a national footprint. So welcome, Rebecca, and welcome, Marcy.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So let's talk a little bit about history. What's the history of this virtual Catholic school? Why did the Archdiocese of Miami decide to create it? What motivated the creation of this school? What's its background? Rebecca, we'll start with you. Go ahead.
Sure. So about 6 years ago, there was already a standing virtual Catholic school that was helping students both locally and across the country. And once it got under the leadership of our superintendent, Dr. Kim Przybylski, she kind of wanted to make sure that it was a solid Catholic virtual institution based on the Catholic identities from within the Archdiocese of Miami. And so she kind of took the concept of a virtual school and wanted to restructure it completely. So in that restructure, everything was redone in essence, starting from the name of the school, the leadership of the school, the curriculum, the faculty, the asynchronous platform, et cetera, et cetera. So the main goal has always been to enhance the existing curriculum options of Catholic schools, not only in Miami, but obviously in the state of Florida and across the country. And in that, once we became associated specifically with the Archdiocese of Miami and we got the blessing of our Archbishop, we were able to then create a school that was not only virtual and had a solid academic foundation, but also had a solid Catholic foundation, like I said before, with the Catholic components from the Archdiocese of Miami and traditionally from most of the Catholic schools across the country. And so with that, we were able to help schools, like I said, within Miami. And then we also saw a need to take the program nationally. And so that's what we did. We offer our curriculum, our different programs, our different options all across the nation so that Catholic schools can enhance the curriculum and make sure that they're able to offer all of the courses, all of the electives, all of the options that charter, private, and public schools are able to offer.
So Rebecca, do you have full-time and part-time students?
That's correct. We have what we refer to as part-time students, are students that are possibly taking maybe one, two, or three courses with us, either for enrichment or credit recovery. And our full-time students are those that, if they are seniors, we are accredited to issue the high school diploma. So they will be earning their high school diploma from the virtual school. But we also have full-time students that are in grades, you know, K through 11 that are doing us full-time either for a semester, a quarter, or possibly for the school year, but they do have the goal of transitioning back to a brick and mortar school either during the current school year or in future school years.
So in Florida, of course, we have one of the country's oldest and most premier virtual schools in the Florida Virtual School, but it seems like you guys are sort of the Catholic version of that. Is that a fair analogy?
Yes, I would venture to say that's fair. We offer primarily the same courses that they offer. What makes us unique is that we are Catholic. All of our teachers are Catholic school teachers that go through all the professional development and all the other requirements that the superintendent from the Archdiocese of Miami wants them to go through. And we also are able to offer our services right away. So we don't need to wait for a minimum number of students to form a cohort or a specific group. You know, if a school calls me today and says, I have one student that needs Algebra 1, Semester 1. We pretty much are able to start them, you know, within the next 24 to 48 hours and don't have to wait for a minimum enrollment from a particular school or archdiocese.
Well, that's fantastic. Talk to me about the concept of partner schools. I know you have partner schools across Florida and across the country. What's that signify, that a Catholic school, for example, is a partner school?
We're at about 80 schools now from across the country that we work with. And the term partner school simply means that we are helping that school either with one student or maybe with 100 students. And like I said before, it may be that they want to offer AP government and perhaps they don't have the certified teacher, or the number of students that needs it is too small and they're not able to fit that into the schedule. Then they partner with us so that we can offer the course so that the student stays in the Catholic school and is able to take the course. We partner with them if they have students maybe who have attendance issues because they're sick, or for other reasons that they can't fulfill the attendance requirements. So they take the courses, they partner with us, and we're able to offer the student the courses virtually until they're able to go back to school. For some of the schools, we are their summer school program. They do all of their course remediation through us over the summer. And so we partner with them for the remediation. We have some schools that partner with us specifically for dual enrollment in the middle school. So they will have their sixth, seventh, or eighth graders taking high school courses with us, and that's how we partner with them. So essentially the partnership is a very fluid, very open relationship where the school, essentially the principal or a guidance counselor, calls and says, this is our situation. And then under the leadership of the superintendent, we are able to customize a program specifically for the need of that school or that diocese or archdiocese.
So obviously we're in a period of time that's unique in all of our lives. The first global pandemic since 1918 that has radically disrupted all aspects of life, but particularly education. How has this affected your work? I presume that you've seen a dramatic spike in enrollment. I know that certainly in the district schools, they're very much struggling with trying to deal with hybrid programs and virtual instruction because they have no history of that. And we read story after story of teachers just really pulling their hair out because they've been teaching one way for 25 years. Now suddenly they've been asked to teach virtually and they have no experience at all. I presume some of that's also happening in the Catholic schools. And I also presume that means that a lot of them are turning to you. So what are you seeing in terms of how the schools are responding to you now during the pandemic, the Catholic schools, and what's your enrollment look like? How's the pandemic affecting your enrollment?
Our enrollment is sort of unusual, specifically during fall 2020, which is what we refer to, you know, August now through December, where before a lot of students or a lot of schools were asking us to help enroll students, you know, for a specific time period that was very concrete, quarter one, semester one, or the school year. This year, I think the questions that Marcy and I have been getting the most are about, for lack of a better phrase, sort of a fluid enrollment, because parents are waiting to see what different districts or dioceses or archdioceses are doing across the country. Right now, parents are asking to make sure that we are being extremely flexible in the enrollment because they either want to do only a quarter until their diocese or archdiocese approves students back on campus, or the opposite. Even if they're approved to go back on campus, some families don't want to make that decision yet. They don't want to send the student back on campus yet, possibly until January or later on in the school year. So our enrollment has stayed the same and has increased, but it's the type of enrollment that we've seen the difference in, where parents and schools want the assurance, you know, if at the end of first quarter we ask to leave the virtual school, can you assure, you know, that the report card and the transcript will be ready so that we can get back to our campus? Or some schools are waiting possibly until the end of the first semester. So those are the types of questions we've seen now that are a little bit different. They don't necessarily need our teachers per se in the virtual school because, like you said, they do have teachers that are ready to work, and what they need more help with is the content. So we've had a lot more inquiries on, can we use your content that already exists? You know, it's effective. It's already been, you know, approved by the state. It's an accredited curriculum. Can we just use the curriculum with our teachers? So we've had questions like that. But I think the biggest difference has been that, whereas before we've had schools saying, you know, this student's going to use you for the full school year, we've had schools contact us and say, you know, this group of 15, 20, 30 students is only going to be with you until the situation in our particular community changes.
And of course, you have no way of knowing when the situation in your community is going to change. So that's obviously a challenge. Marcy, I want to ask you a little bit about the actual instruction. Obviously, you're a competency-based system so that kids have some level to move at their own pace. Talk a little bit about the advantages you guys have in terms of having a history of teaching in a much more flexible environment, in a competency-based environment, and how that's allowed you guys to be able to meet the needs of students that you may not have been able to do had you not had this kind of infrastructure and training and history already in place.
I think for our students and even our teachers, it really is, it's just a blessing to have the type of curriculum and the platform that we are using. For the mere fact that if we have students who, you know, may not be able to hop on that Zoom call right then and there for one instance or another, which is what happens in some schools at this time, especially for your younger ones, because maybe they have to go to work with the parents and hop on, you know, later in the afternoon, evening. Well, these students aren't getting behind because they have access to the material at all points in time. And then our teachers are really flexible with that face-to-face video conferencing component where they do meet with the students as needed. They have office hours. And so they're able to be flexible while they are full-time teachers. They can also still work with the students and families based on a schedule that works for both of them. In order to meet the needs of all of our students, the platform and just the content and how it's asynchronous actually has been really positive for the mere fact that, again, our students don't have to be on at a certain time of day, but we do have schools that if they are, you know, say they don't have a teacher, maybe they've lost a teacher due to the pandemic, which has happened really quickly. Then all of a sudden during that math class, those students are able to log in and actually see all of that content, go through their lessons, and then they're able to contact the teacher as needed throughout the day. And I think that's been really helpful because when you do have a situation where all of a sudden, you know, you may have lost a student or a teacher, and you still have a lot of needs to be met. And most of our Catholic schools, you know, we are very inclusive and have students at all different levels. And so I think it's definitely an easier way to meet the needs of the students because you do have so many different kind of learning styles and platform. The platform allows, you know, videos and hands-on activities within those interactive games, things like that. So I think it's been much easier to meet the needs of those students.
I'm sure a lot of your colleagues in your partnership schools that have been doing brick and mortar instruction for 20, 25 years are going through culture shock and really struggling with having to do, you know, virtual instruction, sometimes full time, sometimes trying to do virtual instruction and in-class instruction at the same time. What kind of interactions have you guys had with your colleagues in the partnership schools? And what can you do to help your colleagues that are used to a certain way of teaching and now suddenly are being thrust in a whole new world?
I have to definitely speak, at least for the Archdiocese of Miami, but I do know that other, at least the province in the state of Florida, we did open up a couple professional developments for, especially for students with different learning styles and learning needs in August for the whole hybrid model, the virtual model. We really focus on online learning, how to meet the needs of those students. But professional developments, we and the Archdiocese have been offering the teachers since spring, since we were kind of told, okay, close the doors, it's time to go. We've had over 60 professional developments that we've offered all on virtual teachings and learnings for our teachers so that our students would be successful during this time just in case. And I think it's been really great. We've teamed up with a couple different companies and vendors to provide these trainings. And we've really, I think, flourished just in this time. I mean, it's been very difficult. It's been a learning process, but I think we've done a really good job overall. But I think the training and professional developments are so important for the teachers.
Rebecca, I want to talk a little bit about the future. How do you think this is all going to play out in moving forward? obviously we're not going back to January 2020. Education is at some level being permanently changed. But how do you think this is going to affect your work moving forward? I mean, how are you thinking about what the future is going to look like for your school and your relationship with your partnership schools?
I think that before the pandemic, and unfortunately it took such a negative, worldwide event to sort of bring virtual education to the forefront, not only to schools, but to parents and to students. I think before, there was a misconception of what virtual education was, that perhaps it was easier or it's not legitimate or whatever the case may be. And I think now that parents and schools especially are realizing that virtual education can help students and schools grow in enrollment. And so now it offers you different opportunities that you weren't able to maybe solve before, where perhaps maybe families did leave the Catholic school to look for something in a private school or a charter school or a public school. Now the Catholic schools can offer the same courses. They can offer more courses if need be. If they are stuck and there's a situation where a student is sick or can't meet the attendance requirements, there is a way to reach out to your community virtually through Zoom, through Microsoft, through whatever tools, the students and the teachers are comfortable with. I think it's just gonna bring virtual education to the forefront. It's gonna become something that is talked about, not only this year, but I think in years to come. And I think that once the schools that we're partnering with saw that we were able to help them during this unfortunate situation, which hopefully will not repeat itself anytime soon or ever, I think they will see, okay, when they are kind of stuck, we're saying, oh my gosh, what can we do? Hopefully the virtual school will come to mind and say, wait, they were able to help us back then. Maybe there's something they can do to help us now. Not only with students, we do have adult learning classes where we can help the faculty not only with catechist certification, but with professional development through Marcy's courses. So it's not just to help the students. We really want it to make it a platform that can help the school overall, students and teachers. And so again, we're hoping that instead of what is that, or I didn't even know that existed, now more schools and families will say, wait, they were able to help us. It did work. My student did learn. They did find it effective. And now we'll grow, not just because we want the enrollment of the virtual school to grow, but I think Marcy and I always say, if the virtual school enrollment is growing, it means that Catholic education enrollment is also growing, which is really what we want. That is the goal. We want Catholic schools to be able to offer everything that, that their counterparts are able to offer. And I think that the virtual school offers that and allows that and allows a little bit of flexibility in how students learn, how they access the courses. So if we're growing in enrollment and we're becoming more popular, that means that Catholic schools are as well. And I think that ultimately is the goal.
I'm hearing lots of talk about, I'll use the word unbundling for lack of a better term, which is, back in the day, you went to a brick and mortar school and it was one-stop shopping, full service. Childcare was there, all your academics were there. If it was a Catholic school, your faith-based education was there. But now, of course, you have families creating learning pods, micro schools, homeschool cooperatives. And there's a lot of talk about how can schools partner with all of these entities that are popping up. And as you're talking, I'm wondering if Catholic schools are thinking about, okay, there may be a homeschool cooperative with 15 kids that may not want to be full-time brick and mortar Catholic students, but maybe they want some part of what we offer. Maybe they want a course from our Catholic online provider, such as yourself. Maybe they want some faith-based instruction. Maybe they want to visit the brick and mortar school twice a week to get access to a computer lab or whatever. Do you think that this might really open up people's thinking in terms of broadening the business model, the academic model, so that you can interface with families in way more unique ways and diverse ways than we have in the past? Do you think that's possible, Rebecca?
Absolutely. I think that the examples that you gave, Doug, are spot on. We do have we really haven't had too many homeschool families, to be honest, ask about our program. But I think because of what's going on, we are getting more calls about parents who say, my student is flourishing virtually. I didn't even think this would happen. I thought maybe they wouldn't do so well. And so we are considering this now long term, even if schools do reopen. And so I think that there is a community of Catholic homeschool families that haven't been able to find a curriculum that's specifically Catholic. You know, they want to make sure, you know, what archdiocese or diocese is behind it. And I think when families and schools see that it's not just Miami schools, you know, that are turning to us for help. I mean, you know, I'm working with a school now in Alaska. I never would have thought, you know, 20 years ago as an educator, or even 6 years ago when the virtual school started, that I would be able to help someone, you know, in Alaska, which just seems just so far away. And that Alaska reached out to Miami for help, I mean, I think it speaks volumes as to how the school can help, you know, homeschools and schools in the future. So I think just as the virtual school is getting creative, you know, we came up with the dual enrollment, we expanded it to K through 12. We started adding the catechist courses for our teachers. You know, Marcy started adding the professional development for teachers. Just as we get creative and find ways that the virtual school can help, I think schools are going to get more creative as well and say, wait, now we can partner with a virtual school. Let's see how creative we can get now that we know that we have someone that we can reach out to help us meet this goal or give us input on how to make this plan or this strategy successful.
Now, I want to talk a little bit about some of the policy changes that we probably need to make in Florida to support some of this. I mean, at the moment, if you're a full-time scholarship student, you cannot use your scholarship for your virtual school. Is that correct? You have to be in a brick and mortar. Now, we have a waiver, a temporary waiver right now, but we probably need to make that permanent, right? So a child could use their scholarship at your virtual school. Is that something that obviously we need to work on, right?
Yes, that would be great. I think, like Marcy and I have said before, if there's anything that the virtual school, and I know the superintendent would also be willing, you know, anything that we can do, if you know, provide testimonies, data, you know, whatever we need to provide to show that families really do in specific circumstances. Obviously, the goal is to have all students on a brick and mortar campus, but there are some situations where it's just not possible. Whether it's the pandemic or whether there's other reasons. And so it's sort of frustrating when the families call and they're excited about our program and they sort of feel relieved that they have finally found something that can help their child. And then, and I know Marcia will agree, when it gets to that question of, but do you take step up? And now all of that, you know, all of that frustration that we relieved and all that stress that we relieved comes right back when we say, you know, unfortunately, those funds, you know, we can't accept them. So I think, again, if the legislation needs to change, if we need to help the legislation change, I know that there's families and students that would be willing to speak up, schools, you know, principals, you know, Marcy as well. So it is unfortunate, you know, we understand. And so, you know, we explain to them and the families are very understanding. But if virtual education is legitimate and, you know, we are accredited and we follow all the regulations of the other schools, you know, we have a Florida Department of Education number, and we're expected to follow all the other requirements. We get accredited every 5 years through Cognia, et cetera, et cetera. It's unfortunate that in that light, we're not seen as equivalent education, you know, to the brick and mortar schools. And then it kind of sheds that light of, well, does that mean that it's not legitimate? Is it not real education if you can't accept these funds that a brick and mortar school can accept? So again, if there's anything we can do, I know that Marcy and I will be right on board to provide whatever we need to provide.
Yeah, just so our listeners know what we're talking about, there has historically been in state law a prohibition of using the scholarships in any environment that's not brick and mortar. And so apparently that made sense back in the day, but certainly today that makes no sense at all. And we've been fortunate that we have a waiver for kids to be able to access your schools today, provided they do it through a partnership school. But certainly we got to fix the legislation and make it 21st century relevant so that children can really customize their education, including if they need to be a full-time virtual student. And for a lot of kids, that is the best fit, you know, for all kinds of personal reasons. And so we need to be able to do that. So my promise to you is that that will be a priority of ours in the next legislative session. We'll ask the legislature to please consider it. And we will certainly take you up on your offer to help provide information to the legislature, because obviously that would be really important for them to understand why we need to make this change. So I appreciate that.
And Doug, if I can just say something real quick about that too, you know, so often we talk about our students that, you know, come from lower socioeconomic backgrounds, and that these are the students we really need to support and make sure that, you know, we're closing those gaps and really, you know, helping to get them to the next level. And this is the perfect opportunity right now, you know, that, again, some of our schools may not be able to offer, especially your elementary schools that are really small, some of these advanced courses or supplemental courses. And this is the time that we could be doing that, getting these students ahead, or if needed, remedial courses, whatever it may be. And I think we can really help fill those gaps, even in summer. Summer's a key time to help fill some of those gaps with these students. So I think the more, you know, like Rebecca said, this is an accredited school, and, you know, that the more people realize that, and I think, you know, what a wonderful opportunity that's here waiting for them. So I'm definitely with you both on getting this passed.
Well, it's a huge equity issue too, because one of the things we've seen in the data is the pandemic seems to be disproportionately hurting low-income communities and minority communities. And so those are the communities who would need as much flexibility as possible in educating their children. And it's ironic that we're not providing them that much flexibility. And so really, if we care about equity, and we all do, then you really got to level the playing field by allowing these families to have as much flexibility as possible with their scholarship dollars. So it's something that certainly we all need to work on together, and I think our legislative leadership will understand, and hopefully they'll respond and help us out.